From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the sixth day of June 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here to look at the agricultural weather forecast for the United States. The GFS, the European model, is not really confident about what the June and July period would look like, and it's saying some bad things about that summer months. We'll hear about that and dry conditions all across the Northern Hemisphere, in fact. And then we'll also take up the agricultural news and look at some new uses for corn as I discovered them at CUTC, or the Corn Utilization Technology Conference in St. Louis yesterday. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson to take a look at the agricultural markets and the trade in Chicago. However, Jackie, we've been spending some time always looking at the support and resistance levels. I'd like to start there, please.
Well, we've got a gap that's left behind in July between 389 and 3/4 and 390 and 3/4. Resistance is at 389, support's at 367 and 3/4. July beans, we filled the gap on Monday for May beans. So we've got resistance at 1018 and support at 969 and 3/4. December, we've got a remaining gap above us at 410 to 410 and a half. Resistance 414 and 397 and 3/4 is support. Novi beans filled the gap yesterday. Resistance is 1038, support 1007 and a half. And December wheat in Chicago, resistance at 588 and support at 529.
Next week, USDA will release the monthly WASDE report for June. That's just not very far away now.
No, it certainly isn't. And we do some in-house research on that, looking at the price changes that have happened on the day of the report over the last 16, and then what happens in the next 2 weeks. Now, when you look at this report, on the day of the report on corn, positive change has been up 10 and down 6. But 2 weeks later, the positive change has been up 23 or down 32. So you can tell that there's a lot hanging on, as we move toward the acreage and, crop progress reports, those type of things. When you look at beans, a positive report for June on beans is a nickel up on the day or 7 cents down on the day of the report. But you get 2 weeks out and you're looking at 41 cents up or 36 cents down. So that 2 weeks out is a pretty darn important area after this particular report.
Indeed, the WASDE reports play a role each and every month in the marketplace. During the month of June, however, the acreage numbers are released. They play a role. So does the weather. And this time around, it seems trade is going to continue to play a pretty outsized role in the market.
Oh, yeah, trade this year. Everybody's the key word right now is tariffs, right? You hear everything about tariffs with Canada and Mexico and, of course, China. Well, I think it's interesting. Yesterday, everybody was talking about how China was going to punish us with $50 billion worth of tariffs on goods for us. And now today they offered to buy $70 billion in farm manufacturing and energy products if the administration abandons their threatened tariffs. Now, one of the things that we have to, that they're looking at is maybe easing some of the regulations, allowing more imports from the United States. That'd be a great thing. But if they would ramp it up like this, one of our concerns has to be, can we meet the bean and corn demand? And again, nothing is signed at this point in time. One of the things that the president has said often is that China, Mexico, and Canada have punished us in a lot of ways. And so I think a lot of this tariff information or this tariff talk is basically nothing more than strong negotiations. You always start out at a strong point and hope to settle at least a better point than where you're at.
We'll keep an eye on that and hope that it all works out. Hey, other things in Washington, D.C. that you've been keeping an eye on, I suppose you've been pondering the RFS and ethanol?
Well, yeah, there's quite a bit of news there. I'll tell you, the headlines today, of course, were that the White House, pulled or delayed the RFS. Two senators, Ernst and Grassley from Iowa, are saying that the EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt basically betrayed Trump because because he's not supporting the granting of waivers to smaller refineries, allowing E15 year-round and possibly giving RINs on that, maybe giving RINs for ethanol exports, and finding a remedy to the waiver issues. So I thought it was interesting. Ernst said, Iowa is feeling the love from Trump and said he will not sign a deal that's bad for farmers. So it'll be interesting to see if Pruitt backs up a little bit and gives us opportunity to move forward on this.
And finally, before I let you go, it's a bit unusual at this time of the year, but we should probably talk about both Brazil and Argentina.
Well, I agree. And one of the things I wanted to highlight today, Todd, was, you know, basically we know that they had a strong trucker strike down there, supposedly under control now and stopped. But it's going to be, there's still a question to that. You know, Petrobras, which is a government-owned fuel refinery, basically decided to go with pricing fuel according to the market rather than having a fixed price. And, you know, the price of the pump for some truckers have doubled in the last 12 months. So basically these truckers haul about 50% or 56% of all the goods in Brazil. So, you know, the Truckers Association down there said that they represent 700,000 independent truckers. And I looked at the U.S., we have about 390,000. Independent truckers out of the 3.5 million truckers we actually have. So the government came in and they said, well, we reduced the price. It says it will give you 13 cents U.S. Per gallon, but the pump price stays the same. The truckers have to send in for a rebate. And then on top of that, the farmers don't qualify for this reduction in diesel price. And they establish new freight rates set by the government. So if you don't pay the freight rate, there's a penalty. Your penalty is double. So let's say you have $200 a ton freight rate and you find somebody who's willing to take it for $150, you're going to have to pay a $100 penalty because you didn't pay that extra $50. And so, you know, the truckers really have lost a tremendous amount of support down in Brazil. And I just want to kind of sum up why. And I think this is something that we all need to think about. The losses during that truck strike were, they say Brazil's APVPA says it was $826.7 million. Can you imagine? And these are just some of the things that happened. The two main ports, Santos and Paranaguá, shut down. They ran out of beans as well as fuel, so they couldn't run any kind of machinery. Soybeans no longer were being transported to the ports. That was completely halted. Bean crushing plants had to close. Biodiesel production closed. Meat processing across Brazil suspended all their operations because of the fact that they didn't have any animals and they had no place to ship the meat if they did process it. So meat exports were halted. Livestock producers ran out of feed. And this is 50 million chickens died. They starved to death because of this strike. Dairy farmers dumped their milk as well as they were not able to get the protein that they needed for their cows. Supermarkets ran out of perishable food. Half of Brazil's airports ran out of fuel. International flights couldn't come in because of lack of fuel. The gas stations ran out of fuel. Buses stopped running because of a lack of fuel. Car manufacturers suspended all their operations due to a lack of parts. Companies closed temporarily because workers couldn't get to work. Can you imagine this? The workers at Petrobras decided they were going to join in and strike also. And so then they closed up all the schools besides. So, you know, in the long run, I think this could really help us because it certainly proves that they are not a reliable supplier. It's going to take quite a bit of time to get this back on the track. But the interesting thing down there, Todd, to highlight right now is the presidential election is coming up in October, and Lula, who is in prison, is leading the polls. Can you imagine? It's amazing. And on Argentina, all I really want to touch on is the fact that, remember, we've been talking about how they've been reducing the corn export tariff by 0.5% every month. Well, the government said they're just not getting enough taxes, so now they're talking about stopping doing that. And so, again, now we're between a rock and a hard place, and nobody knows what's going to happen with corn and bean acres, you know, and everything else. So it's a situation where they not only have problems financially with the peso, but they've got so many government problems in both of those countries. We have to be thankful we're here. Let's just put it that way.
Indeed. Hey, thanks, Jackie. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. Hey, please do check out our calendar. We'll be out and about a whole lot in the month of June. Tomorrow, in fact, we'll be in Springfield with the Bradfordton Grain Elevator there on Bradfordton in Springfield, Illinois. Not at the elevator, but at 1266 North Bradfordton. That's the street. Rochag Commodities is the sponsor, along with University of Illinois Extension. Sure hope to see you there. But next week, if you're not in the Springfield area, you can catch us in a few other places, too. We'll be in Fairview, Macomb, and Beardstown on Monday, on Tuesday, Ashland, Gibson City, and Diamond. That Diamond event is the Coal City event. I had it down wrong, so it's in Diamond, not Coal City, though. They're next to each other. That's for those of you up at the Prairie Creek Grain Elevator Company. And then on Wednesday, the 13th, we'll be in Hartsburg. And finally, I'll wrap up next week, all the way up in Galena at the Illinois Beef Association's Summer Conference. Looking forward to seeing you all at one of those meetings. All of the events are up on the website at willag.org. You can find the dates and the times and the places there. In today's agricultural news, we touched on this one earlier with Jackie Vakes, but let's start with the RFS betrayal. That's how a key Midwest senator describes Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt's pending biofuels proposal to reduce costs for oil refineries but allow year-round sales of a higher blended ethanol gasoline mix. Republican Chuck Grassley won't condemn President Trump, who promised on the campaign trail to adhere to the 15-billion-gallon ethanol mandate in the renewable fuel standard, but the longtime ethanol advocate who's threatened to demand EPA Chief Scott Pruitt's resignation if he undermines the RFS, tells Farm Reporters.
I think that Pruitt has betrayed the president.
Yet, Grassley says, a pending White House biofuels proposal the president brokered to drive down the cost of oil refiners of ethanol credits called RINs by attaching them to exports undermines Trump's own commitment to year-round E15 sales.
From what I've heard, it seemed that it would fall far short of the promises made to Midwestern farmers and to the ethanol industry.
Grassley had not seen the White House proposal when he spoke, but said he'd been briefed on it by industry and lower-level EPA officials, and the senator, using the president's own well-worn words, implied Trump had not drained the swamp of big oil politics.
And you know how big oil has had Washington wired for a long time, and I think EPA is part of this Washington swamp delivering this blow to ethanol if it occurs.
But the damage may have already been done, with Reuters reporting record low RIN prices of 18 cents on Monday. Oh, the bad news keeps coming out of Washington. It was another piling on trade tariff day in Washington, another stomach-wrenching day for the nation's farmers after Mexico announced its list of retaliatory tariffs. That list of goods aimed squarely at U.S. agricultural products like pork shoulders and legs, apples, ham, potatoes, and some cheeses. All U.S. products on Mexico's list have lost preferential tariffs established under NAFTA, and all of the U.S. products on the list faced tariffs of about 15% to 25%. The tariffs are expected to go into effect July 5th. Mexican officials have selected a number of U.S. products that have implications in some districts where there's important congressmen and senators, so that it would affect voters and citizens that live in the districts of people who have a voice and vote in the American Congress. Notably, the tariff list did not include imports of U.S. corn and certain other vital commodities in Mexico. Let's stay with trade, where U.S. Secretary Sonny Perdue yesterday told reporters during a town hall meeting that the talks between the United States and China have been challenging to tackle because of Beijing's own market needs. Pork, unfortunately, seems to be the one sector, he says, right now with the 25% tariff that is more difficult to discuss with the Chinese. And he goes on to say they indicate they have a domestic glut as well. Oftentimes, he says, when you have as much as you need at home, you're willing to put up barriers against imports. Other angry trade partners aren't far behind. Canada is imposing its own retaliatory list on July 1st, and Europe has its own plans that could take effect in mid-June. And finally today, this all seems to be taking a toll in the Midwest. New polling shows that voters across three Midwestern states are disappointed with the Trump administration decisions regarding biofuels in particular. Released by the National Biodiesel Board this week, a survey of voters in Iowa, Missouri, and Minnesota overwhelmingly say they support federal policies to encourage growth in biodiesel and renewable fuels use. Their support cut across party lines, with more than two-thirds of Republicans and nearly three-quarters of independents saying they support U.S. efforts to boost the expansion of the biodiesel industry. In total, 73% of the voters agreed. A substantial majority of voters in those states, including 63% of independents, say EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt's efforts to lower demand for biofuels does not reflect the president's promise to support renewable fuels and the RFS. More than 80% of Republican voters in the survey said it was important to them that President Trump keep his promise to defend the RFS. And that's a quick look at the day's agricultural news. For Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, farmers gathered this first full week of June in St. Louis to learn more about future uses of the nation's number one commodity crop, corn. This was at the Corn Utilization Technology Conference, sponsored by the National Corn Growers Association. CUTC happens every 2 years. It's a conference dedicated to future uses of corn, and Vijay Singh is a regular. Now, he works for the Agricultural College at the University of Illinois and specializes in engineering ethanol processing plants. He sees them expanding to include biochemical production in the near future.
You know, chemicals have been around, but they have come from petroleum sources. Now what we are doing is, rather than using petroleum sources, we are using these renewable sources. And that's the big thing right now. And for that, you need large amounts of sugar. And U.S. is at a major advantage in terms of producing sugars from corn. And that comes from corn processing industry.
To this point in time, the industry has focused on producing food, high fructose corn syrup, ethanol, and some other co-products.
So sugar has become the preferred feedstock for producing these high-value biochemicals that will be used for consumer products, polymers, and things like that.
Things that have been made from crude oil or petrochemicals, but that can now economically be made from a renewable source.
Because in ethanol production, we are capped at 15 billion gallons, and there's not much room to grow unless that cap is lifted. So what's happening, or what we're starting to see, is that more and more dry grind ethanol plants are producing sugars rather than producing ethanol or biofuel, because those sugars can then be used to produce biochemicals.
A new use which takes advantage of the existing ethanol production infrastructure to replace a petrochemical product with one made from corn. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, please start for me in the United States and a forecast for the month of June, maybe further out if you can.
Well, I think the month of June is still going to be somewhat similar to that of May. I think that we will see a good mix of weather across the region. Most everybody will get rain at one time or another, and the temperatures will probably fluctuate between normal and above normal. There will be enough drying, though, out there that some of these areas that get the lighter amounts of rain will probably end up with a net loss in moisture. This will be mostly in the southwestern corner of the Corn Belt. There's been a lot of divergence in the model runs here recently with the European trying to make it much drier across the Midwest crop areas, while the GFS American model has been promoting a lot of precipitation. And the GFS is too wet, Europeans too dry. So somewhere in between, we're going to find that the month of June is still a relatively good month for crops, but we'll have to watch these drier pocketed areas.
On that note, let's check in on some other dry areas across the planet. We'll start maybe in China and then work our way back to the west across Eurasia.
Absolutely. The northeast part of China had some hot weather this past week and really took away most of their topsoil moisture, and they're running very short right now on topsoil moisture and marginally adequate to short at the subsoil. That's not a good way to come into their summer. However, there's going to be scattered showers in northeastern China over these next 5 to 6 days, and that should help to gradually improve topsoil moisture. It's not going to fix the long-term deficits, but at least it points them in the right direction. It's also a little bit dry to the west there in parts of the North China Plain and the Yellow River Basin. These are also important crop areas, and they too have been fighting some dryness here recently. They will also encounter some scattered showers over the coming week, but the rain is going to be very erratic there, and definitely there will still be some pockets of dryness. It's still worth noting by this time next week.
Kazakhstan, Russia, the Ukraine, maybe Belarus?
Yeah, we're kind of running low on moisture there, too. Really a large part of the region from Poland and Belarus down into Ukraine, and then from Ukraine eastward into Kazakhstan. It's kind of an L-shaped area, and it's fairly significantly dry. It's not quite as dry as northern China is, but there's some concern there that there's going to be only a short-term bout of rainfall coming up in this next 5 days or so, and then we'll probably go back into some warmer and drier conditions there. So not out of the woods in any one of these areas. And, of course, there's all kinds of speculation about the U.S. summer that everybody's still focused on. Earlier this week, the European forecast model came out with a three-month outlook saying a hot and dry summer for the entire Midwest and southern Canada. Not that I'm necessarily advocating that, just telling you what kind of craziness is out there right now.
Has it been more accurate than the U.S. model?
The European has been more accurate with rainfall in the short-term outlooks. The GFS has a problem in the summer with over-exaggerating some of the rainfall forecasts. However, the European may be a little too dry here in recent days, and the GFS definitely has a wetter bias. But in the long range, I don't think you can count on the European being any more accurate than the GFS when you start talking about months down the road.
Hey, thanks, Drew.
Have a good day.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.